Thank you very much, Matthew. It is good to be here. I'll just make a quick disclaimer. IFES, International Fellowship of Evangelical Students, is actually a global body. We are in 11 regions around the world. So I have the privilege of leading one of those, but just one. It happens to be the region with the most movements, but not the most students. Because if you were in English-speaking Africa and you were working with the IFES movement in Ethiopia or Nigeria or Ghana or some of those countries, you could have, or Kenya, you could have 50 or 60,000 students in your movement. We're not privileged to have those numbers in Europe. In many ways, we are country-heavy, but student-light in many places. And also, I'm conscious that I'm not just here to talk about students. Talked a little bit about Europe generally, but naturally, any of the changes that are happening in Europe are going to be seen largely initially through that student age group. We remember back in the 60s, it was student revolutions that sparked much wider revolutions in parts of Eastern Europe particularly. And in Ireland, where I led the student movement for a number of years, to be succeeded by none other than Mark Ellis, who is now the Keswick director, we went through a period of immense social change. The Republic of Ireland went from having, just for one example, went from having abortion as illegal, one of the last places in Europe to have it illegal, in one referendum. It went from being illegal to having one of the most liberal abortion situations in Europe. So it wasn't a gradual change. It was an overnight revolution. And a couple of journalists wrote a book just after that referendum called Ireland Says Yes, which was about the changes from largely a Roman Catholic church-dominated society to a very liberal Western, modern Western state. And that this was seen in saying yes in the abortion referendum. And one of the theses of the book of those journalists was that those who were campaigning for a yes vote made a conscious decision to target the student population. Because they realized that if they changed the minds or if they harvested what was going on in the minds of students, that then they would get their parents and they would get the other generations. And that's just one example of a strategy used by a political campaign, which again fired me up to do student ministry. Because if you get the students, you will get them, you will get their children, you will even have a role perhaps in changing the mindsets of a previous generation, which we will maybe say a little bit about later on. So that's me. I look after the 44 countries or movements in Europe. And you're probably just wondering, where on earth is ASEAT and where is Famagusta? So here you are. ASEAT is in the black blob in the extreme top left corner. Famagusta is the blob in the extreme bottom right corner. ASEAT is a little community in Greenland, and we have a small pioneer work there. And a few years ago, our pioneers were able to go from the capital by plane up to ASEAT, to a high school, and to start to do a little bit of work there. Now, it was just very, very tentative connection, but we got some folks from there in the capital at a summer camp. So in terms of where is the furthest we have managed to reach, that would be ASEAT. And then Famagusta, there's another pioneer movement in Cyprus. Famagusta is in Turkish Cyprus, in the part of the island. And a couple of years ago, my wife and I went, and Gwen had the privilege of speaking to a group of sub-Saharan African students that works almost entirely among internationals there in Famagusta. Now, since that has happened, we've had the tragedy of the war in Ukraine. Just amazing to meet my old friend Gregory from from Ukraine sitting over here, an amazing surprise to me this morning. And of course, when the war started, Ukraine was put into our region. So now I suppose we go a little bit further east. And I now say we work from the country that Trump is trying to take over to the country that Putin is trying to take over. So that's the breadth of our work. But I'll say a little bit about that later on. In order to work out what is happening in Europe generally, I can't point to anything better than a very brief and very readable report commissioned by the European Christian Mission, ECM, and Jim Memory, one of their senior staff, who has written this report. It's 4 years old now, 2021, but it was a missiological report on Europe. And I've just decided most of these early slides are from him, some are added by me, but generally taking his work as my template for some of the changes that are happening in Europe. And he outlines about five different areas of change that are happening. And a lot of these will not be any surprise to you, but it might help for you just to have them reminded again as you think, well, what are the missiological implications? What are the evangelistic opportunities that these changes do present? Of course, first of all, we have globalization. No surprise, that's been going on for quite some time. While I used to say to my American friends, if they drive from San Francisco to Maine, and if I was to do the same journey, I would be going through about 20 countries and 14 languages. That's the diversity. But there's also a homogeneity. You know, the folks all through Europe are, a lot of them are speaking English. It makes my job a lot easier. And certainly if they are in leadership and are in student movements, they're proficient in English. They're watching the same movies. They're listening to the same music. They're traveling. So in many ways, there has been the globalized influence there. Immigration, and I'm not specifically migration. I'll say a little bit more about that later. But just again, the high percentage of people in most European countries, particularly Western European countries, who are not from that country, who were not born in that country. So again, there's another seminar on, I know, about working with international students. International student work is one of our most fruitful and active works because, again, people are open when they're going to a new country, open to lots of things, but also open to the gospel. Euroscepticism and nationalism, this isn't a political statement, it's simply a fact that obviously Brexit was the biggest example of that. But we know that that has been mirrored in many other countries with movements coming, you know, who are skeptical. It's really to do with an institutional skepticism, skepticism of big organizations. But also a rise of nationalism, which has a slightly darker side, which is about my country first, which is about make maybe my country great again, fill in the blanks. And this has led to an increase, and we have found this in universities, students reporting incidents of racism, etc. So that is incredibly challenging, and I suppose a slightly darker side of some of these changes. Hand in hand with that populism, a distrust of government, more demonstrations. My wife Gwen and I was joking that, you know, whenever we're listening to the news, it's almost as if they're deciding where are Monty and Gwen going next, and there will be a demonstration, or there will be some unrest, or there will be a riot or something, you know, whether that was Serbia or Thailand or wherever else. If you look at the world news, there will be demonstrations, there will be marches about something, and a large distrust of government and institutions. And also a wariness of the Eastern threat, Russia is the closest example of that, but also China. I remember in one of our IFES assemblies, somebody was speaking about colonialism, and they were talking a lot about the negative effects of British and American colonialism. And somebody came up afterwards and said, why aren't you mentioning China? Because for us, the biggest colonial power at the minute is China. That's who's putting the money in. That's who's building the roads. That's who's inviting our government over to see what they're doing. So there is a wariness and a new challenge there. And of course, all of these have been made more acute by the COVID crisis. That's perhaps more relevant when we come to some of the personal mental health implications of that among our students. But what happened during COVID and how governments responded to that, and again, I suppose the rise of some conspiracy theories and the distrust of how the governments handled that has made some of this skepticism, this distrust, more acute. There's also economic and social trends. The wealth and inequality, the difference between rich and poor, has increased. Students feel this a great deal because even though they may be seen as coming from or about to enter the higher strata in the social sphere, getting good jobs, having a third level education, student poverty is actually a big issue. Many of the universities are in major cities, major capital cities. Try finding somewhere to live. Try finding something affordable to live if you're studying. And that has meant ministry has been affected because I grew up at a time when, I had privilege. I'm old enough to have had a student grant. Do you remember those days? I lived on campus and we had campus life. We had a campus community, a campus culture. You know, a lot of that's gone, especially in the capital cities. People stay at home and they go in for their lectures and they come out again. So that whole student experience in terms of campus life has changed considerably. And then we have, of course, had the migration crisis, the boats. Again, I come from a part of a world where there were extremely sinister signs recently with effigies of people on boats, you know, stop the boats, put these effigies on a bonfire, that sort of thing. Incredibly sinister. But that has led to a crisis and people saying something has to be done. We don't want to be unwelcoming. We don't want to be racist or whatever, but something has to be done. I talked to my colleague a while ago in Greece, and a lot of their work was just emergency aid to people who were landing on the beaches. So there is a crisis here, especially in the Mediterranean countries. Population change, the fact that we're all living longer, and the fact that younger people and students are earning less, especially if they're trying to put themselves through college, and a lot of people not going into immediately high-paying jobs, but going into flexible jobs, wanting that flexibility. I think my colleague and friend Pete Dre was here a couple of days ago talking about Gen Z or Gen Z, what they're looking for, not to go into one job for life, but maybe a bit of flexibility, working less hours, etc., surviving on a little less. But of course, that's got massive economic implications if we're sustaining an older population. And so there's big issues there. And of course, the social agenda, the LGBT plus gender issues are big, very big in Western Europe. And it's interesting, I would talk to some people from other parts of my region or other part of IFES and people in the churches who will just say, oh, it's not an issue here, it's not an issue here. It will be. It will be very soon. There is no doubt about that. And so those are things that we, again, socially and in terms of population, in terms of economics, we are having to live with in Europe. Environmental trends. We have climate change, natural disasters, urbanization. This is reflected globally, of course. So there's nothing specifically European about this. But it does affect us in that, again, you know, every year there will be floods, there will be droughts in in the Mediterranean areas. There will be forest fires. The world is changing. And I suppose one of the biggest ways in which it's changing is in terms of technology. In terms of technology, technological trends, artificial intelligence. I was visiting one of my colleagues recently, and I had to do a report. And he jokingly said to me, oh, he said, sure, don't worry about doing that report. Just use AI. It'll probably be better than anything you'll write. He's a good friend. I said, no, don't be nonsense. So anyway, I did my report, but then I realized that evening I had to do a farewell speech for him. He was moving to another area. So I gave him some of his own back, and I used AI to write my farewell speech for him. And I was astounded. I don't know, a lot of you guys have been doing this for a while. It was my first attempt. I'd sort of resisted it. You know, I used to use the old joke, I'm not so much concerned about the rise in artificial intelligence as the drop in natural intelligence. But I resisted it. And then I thought, well, let's see what this stuff's about. I was astounded that I got, you know, a 6 or 7 minute speech on my computer in a matter of 5 or 6 seconds. I just put in a few bits of data about him and his wife, and you know, it was all there, the facts, the turns of phrase, the jokes, they were all there. So I asked AI last night if they could give me some things to inspire the attendees of Keswick Convention 2025 to be interested in praying about opportunities in Europe. And within 3 seconds, almost by the time I'd hit return, I got this. Europe is changing rapidly and profoundly. From art to politics, technology to spirituality, recent cultural shifts across the continent reveal both deep questions and surprising opportunities. At Keswick Convention 2025, we're invited to explore how these trends, secularization, migration, digital identity, and new expressions of faith, I haven't put any of that in, challenge and shape how we live and witness as Christians. Understanding European culture today isn't just for academics. It's vital for anyone called to be salt and light in this generation. Let's be curious, courageous, and biblically rooted as we engage with the story unfolding across Europe and discover how God is at work in unexpected places. Now, there was no need to come to the seminar, was there? I mean, it's... And as I said, I hadn't put any, I just put in Keswick Convention 2025 issues of cultural change in Europe or something like that. And within 3 seconds, it had given me that. Now, it does have implications in that one of our staff members was saying that when they're asking students to do devotionals now, sometimes it's quite clear that they've used AI to do their devotions. So there are interesting challenges there. And digital relationships, mental health implications. We're aware of that. I'm sure people who are maybe more socially anxious or more introverted, spending much more time, finding it much more fulfilling, finding it much safer to be with a screen than with people. And of course, when student life is about making friends, joining societies, you know, when Christian student life is about sharing your faith, this has massive implications. Our goddaughter is a social worker. And I saw on a forum just this week, they had put out a list of jobs safe from AI. Top of the list, and interestingly, pastor was in there as well, so that was gratifying. But on top of the list was social worker. So I sent it to her and I said, hey, it's good to know you're going to still have a job when you retire. And she replied, I don't know about that. She's in child services. She says, I don't know about that. She said, a lot of my kids are starting to communicate with bots, the little artificial intelligence things, communicating with bots to talk through their problems, because they're too socially anxious to talk about it with a person. It was quite frightening. And then, of course, the algorithm control of what we see, what's being controlled, where people get their information from, what's true, what's not, fake news. And all of this has been intensified by COVID, including conspiracy theories. Again, people, you know, what we would have regarded as reliable news, big question mark now. And what people we would have regarded as clearly, you know, made up, people are starting to believe. A few years ago, it's celebrating, I think, its 40th anniversary now, Neil Postman's book, Amusing Ourselves to Death. I remember reading this as a student. It was fantastic. And in a very, very telling quote, he compares George Orwell's 1984 book, which was published in 1949, and Aldous Huxley's Brave New World book that was published in 1932. So we're talking about books that were published 80 to 100 years ago. And Neil Postman, 40 years ago, quite prophetically said this: what Orwell feared were those who would ban books. What Huxley feared was that there would be no reason to ban a book because there would be no one who wanted to read one. Orwell feared those who would deprive us of information. Huxley feared those who would give us so much that we would be reduced to passivity and egoism. Orwell feared that the truth would be concealed from us. Huxley feared that the truth would be drowned in a sea of irrelevance. Orwell feared that we would become captive culture. Huxley feared we would become a trivial culture. In short, Orwell feared that what we hate will ruin us, and Huxley feared that what we love will ruin us. It's quite a prophetic quote, isn't it? Memory, in his book, then outlines some spiritual trends. Secularization, the privatization of faith, and the decline in belief. That's been going on for a long time. And in some European countries, it's been going on for a couple of centuries. But it's still there, and those areas like Ireland, from a Catholic perspective, like Hungary, from a Reformed perspective, that were much more conservative socially, have now started to change considerably. So there is the post-secular. And what has been seen here is that in the West, there has been a rise again in an interest in spirituality, but it is a de-institutionalized spirituality. It's a spirituality without church, without scripture, without authority, a sort of self-realization. And then there has been a re-institutionalized political religion in the East of Europe, particularly in places like Hungary, Romania. There seems to be a rise of sort of a more conservative churches, a little bit like what's happening in areas of the States. Parallel to that, and linked with the emigration, has been the rise in diaspora churches or ethnic churches. I know that our organization here, UCCF, has experienced an encouraging rise in social and ethnic mix in the Christian unions that hasn't necessarily been mirrored in the churches. In the Christian unions and the university, you find the folks working together, but you'll find that they go to a Chinese church or a black church or a Church of England. So there has been a rise in these diaspora churches, and also encouragingly in church planting networks. Maybe some of you are part of that. It's been a new change that the new wine sometimes does require new wineskins. In terms of church life, and that has been an aspect which has been noticeable. And then finally, in terms of these trends, the emerging generation, and I'm going to qualify this in a moment, but just to say that when Memory wrote his book in 2021, five countries in Europe recorded more than 70% of 16 to 29-year-olds described themselves as being of no religion or no faith. That 70% of 16 to 29 years weren't even acknowledging the faith of their birth, weren't even acknowledging a cultural attachment, a nominal attachment to any faith. So it's not just that they weren't Christians, they were self-identifying as having no religion. The mental health crisis in the young, existentially, as a result of COVID, I've already touched on. But he said, I guess, encouraging for people like me and so-called parachurch movements, he recorded that there was a noticeable renewal, including many conversions among younger people. I'm thinking of Keller's phrase, it only takes 10% to change a city. So it's not that we're trying to look to see if the entire country can be changed. If we can get 10%, especially of the emerging generation, interacting and responding to the gospel, then that will have a significant effect, I believe, in our communities. There certainly has been a rise in big events. I know some of you will be familiar with the Send, which has started in Scandinavia, I think, and has spread to a number of countries, a big one-day event of thousands of students. There was one in the UK recently. Revive, which came out of IFES as well, is now on its third or fourth iteration. So there's been an increase in big events, bringing folks in and sort of tapping in to that that need. But I'm sure some of you are wondering about this. You can't have missed it, I'm sure. The headline on the right from the Sunday Express was just this past Sunday. Nation's Aid to Church. The Quiet Revival was a report commissioned by the Bible Society. Got a lot of publicity a few months ago. And you don't have to see the figures, but just one of the outstanding statistics is that chart at the bottom, where the dark blue line, the second line in each section, is the percentage of those who attend church other than for baptisms, funerals, and weddings. So who would actually voluntarily go to a church service. That the dark blue line is shows you the increase from 6 years ago, just 6 years ago. And you will see that the biggest difference is that second column, third column, of those who are between 16 and 24 and 25 to 34. So that is a very, very significant change that's happening. And you can find that report. You can download it if you want to see some of the other statistics and what they're telling us. Now, of course, there's statistics and statistics. And I do want to be incredibly encouraged and encourage you to be encouraged by those statistics. But of course, there is going to be a wider context. And I think I don't want to pour cold water on that, but I just want to at least flag up what I would call what the ingredients are of a true harvest. What are the ingredients of a true harvest? And talking to one person who had observed a little bit of this and had done a fair bit of work in the last year among students to see if this was with his experience, he says, yes, there definitely is bigger numbers, definitely is bigger interest, there's more questions. But the issues will be the sufficiency of Scripture. When people understand, right, I'm aware, I'm liking the sound of this Christian gospel, I'm attracted to it, but will they be prepared to say, well, that means that you come under the sufficiency of Scripture, that you accept the uniqueness of Christ and the lordship of Christ, especially in areas of lifestyle. Now, that will take time to work out. That will take time before we can ascertain. And I pray God that it will. But I'm just saying that simply statistics about going to church, while encouraging, will not tell us the whole long-term story. So let's be encouraged. Let's be prayerful. Let's be available for this. And let's do what we can to turn that spiritual interest into conversions, into disciples. The quote that I passed over there was an interesting one that I found from the Guardian's correspondent, Jessica White, she's not a Christian, and she says, I'm delighted that Gen Z men are flocking back to church. I just hope it's for the right reasons. Now, her right reasons might be different from our right reasons, but it shows you that even she was saying, well, why is this happening? Now, she would have a particular agenda. She wouldn't be keen if this meant that people were more concerned about pro-life issues, or that they were taking a different stand on gender or sexuality issues. And she would think, right, is this sort of Andrew Tate stuff? I don't want that to happen. But she does finish her article by saying, and yet I can't help but be encouraged by this. That's a secular commentator. I can't help but be encouraged by this, because one thing she said was, with the pulling away of funding for community centres and leisure centres, and a lot of local communities not being able to sustain them anymore, the church has remained the place, a focal point in the community that is open a lot of the week where they can meet people their own age. So she has recognised a social aspect that the church has maintained and is encouraged by that, which I thought was very interesting. Anyway, back to ASEAT and Famagusta. What have I noticed as I've been working with students and student leaders over the last few years? Well, I'll just give you briefly 10 common factors in thriving student movements. And I hope this can be extrapolated for your churches and for anything else that you're involved in. The first is evangelistic passion. We cannot get away from the fact that the only way the church will grow is as we become more more concerned about sharing our faith, more confident in that, because in some of our cultures, it's been quite difficult. If you're in a very small situation where you're a big minority, then you'll be inclined to use the student movement and even the church as a place to be safe from the outside world. And actually, in some cases, parents can be the worst offenders in this. We have situation in where I grew up where there are Christian halls of residence sponsored by churches and other organizations. And if your son or daughter didn't get into that Christian hall of residence, you know, some of us would be getting phone calls because the parent would be in tears thinking their kid's going to lose their faith, because they're not in a Christian hall of residence. So the tendency would be to be safe and not share your faith. Whether you're a minority or whether you're in a majority or are in a bigger situation where you simply you were able to have all your social activities with people who thought the same, and you didn't need to go out and to share your faith in the campus. So evangelistic passion, and I'll be giving some examples of these before I finish. Pioneering vision. Again, church planters have said that the purpose of the church is to plant other churches. And we have found with student movements, you just can't say, all right, we have a student movement in this city. We need to be looking at cities and campuses where we do not have a presence, where we can actually respond, as we've had to do, from some students saying, is there a group in my city? No, but we'll send a staff worker from another city nearby to help you get started. And pioneering vision is key in developing a thriving movement. Contextualization. There are a lot of resources in the States. There's a lot of resources in the UK. A lot of resources in English. But we have found that the strongest movements are those who've been able to look at that, maybe take some of it, adapt some of it, do it in their own language, and actually do it in a way that will reach the students of their city, and not just take and just put in wholesale what they got from somewhere else. And that connected with that is creative cultural engagement. What will Christians have to say about the ecological crisis? You know, what do we have to say about the mental health issues? Where are we in terms of the arts and music? How are we using all of that? Courage to face the issues of the day. If the issue of the day is gender, identity issues, how are we interacting with that? In the olden days, when I was a student in charge of the in charge of the Christian Union movement in my university, we would have a talk, we would have a lecture. You know, is God a theist? Does God exist? The old apologetic questions, people would come. Very much aware now that that's not the way specifically to tackle. They have their place at times, but it's not the first stop. Because we need to be able to engage properly and sensitively. And so we don't have big lectures about gender identity or sexuality. That's just to invite a fight. You know, you're 3-0 down before you start. Have to face them in a different way. Not compromising or diluting it, but just finding different ways to talk about it. And I'll show you one example of that in a moment. And then the others. Spiritual formation. Not just about the head, but people want reality. And thriving movements are those who have developed a good prayer life, who have encouraged deep discipleship and deep sharing. Some of the stuff that Sam was talking about last night in Romans 12. Movements that do that sort of stuff and the hospitality. I mean, there's many stories of students during the COVID crisis who weren't going to go back to college. One situation I heard from Pete Dre was of a young man who was told by his parents, listen, go back and give it one, just after COVID, go back and give it one more try. They weren't Christians. They say, join a society or something and see if that'll work for you. And the only society that was functioning, because it all closed down, mainly because the pubs were closed, so the only thing that was doing anything was the Christian Union. So he joined the Christian Union, came to faith. So spiritual formation and prayer are important. Also, those who will help our students develop patterns of lifelong learning so that when they graduate, they know the basics of how to function in a church, how to read the Bible, how to read the Bible with other people, how to learn, what books to keep reading, how to grow. And then engagement with the church. We're partners. We're in this together. Missionary arm of the church and the campus, but providing people who will then be the leaders in the church in the next generation. And then finally, resilience. I used to say, when talking about this to churches, that our 18 to 23, 24-year-olds are the ones who are at the front line and having to answer some of the hardest apologetic questions and some of the biggest, you know, interact with some of the biggest cultural issues of our day more than they will have to do at any other period in their life. And yet they're only 19. They're maybe only a Christian 6 months or a year. But they're in a place where they will have to deal with the big issues of the day in a way that people in their 40s, 50s, 60s don't have to. Maybe they should, but they tend not to. So resilience in the face of opposition is very important. I'm going to close before the Q&A with just very simple examples of some of the things that are happening in and around Europe. I'm not sure why this is not... there you are. It's come now. So, evangelism. I'll start in the UK here, because after COVID, they realized that many Christian unions realized that the usual pattern of big meeting and then a small group Bible study, there was an opportunity after COVID to do something a little bit differently. So they started these impact groups, which were evangelistic small groups. And the idea was that that's where our focus is going to be. Invite your friends, not to a big meeting, and don't just have a Bible study for Christians. Do it with your friends. And so this is one series, and the resources are on the UCCF website, where they did Meals with Jesus. And it just took you through the various meals with Jesus in the Scriptures. Very, very fruitful method for evangelism. And then in Albania, they're mad about football. I thought I was mad about football, but in Albania, they're completely mad about football. And so our leader there just started an actual tournament for many teams coming together every year to play. And when I heard from one of the churches there, they just said the IFES movement in Albania has been such a blessing to the churches. They've been visible, they've been active, they've been using this as a very effective tool. Pioneering vision. We have had cross-cultural pioneering in Denmark, where they sent people to Montenegro, that's our leader in Montenegro in the middle, to help start the movement there over a period of years, saying, you know, we're a lot of resources here in Denmark, how can we actually go and help? So I suppose our network is one of our strengths in that we have people in all of these countries that we can send other folks to. Jill has put up an interaction banner there. If anyone in your family or if you are of student age and would fancy going to serve in another country, then go over and use the QR code or come to Jill in the IFES stand in base camp. And then on the right, Belarus. I'm probably say a little bit about this tonight, but again, essentially a closed country, but they have already begun to pioneer in other parts of the region. You know, they can't rely on a lot of outside stuff, so they do it themselves. And they're going where people like us can't go. Having pioneering as part of your DNA. This is our pioneer on the right in Kosovo. They've only started a matter of a year or two. And already they're looking at new cities in which to go. Every year they try to pick a different campus and go and do something there. It's been incredibly encouraging just to see that final piece of the jigsaw coming in as we have been doing a little bit of pioneering there. Contextualization. We'll start closer to home. I talked about lots of information and resources in English from the UK. Well, one of the first people to think that this needs to be contextualized were us over in Ireland. And the current CU movement there has taken what UCCF did with the Uncover project that many of you may be familiar with and said, well, we really just need an Irish version of that that looks at things through Irish eyes and tells Irish stories and isn't particularly got a British stamp on it. So they have started their own Irish gospel project using the methodology. But changing it for the context. And then in Norway, my wife and I visited. We were incredibly encouraged to hear about their initiative for the Rus. Some of you might know it as Rag Week. In Belfast, we had Rag Week, where it's a week meant to be raising a lot of money for charity, but tends to be a complete Monday to Friday binge. And they discovered the same, that it tended to be a very strong drinking culture. And a lot of students who weren't Christians didn't particularly want to be part of that. So they developed a new initiative, a camp where students would actually go away and there'd be sports and there'd be arts and there'd be lots of other things, but it would be a much better environment for them. And they used it as an evangelistic opportunity. And so they have staff devoted to that week specifically all year, and they've had amazing response and numbers interacting with them rather than with the mainstream Rag Week. And then in Hungary, we discovered our movement there. We're wondering, how do we interact with the sexuality issues? And they thought that rather than making it an issue on its own, let's look at the bigger picture of identity and self-worth and meaning. And so they had, these are 5 of 10 banners that they got wonderfully produced. They're all in Hungarian, so I can't read them. I have to depend on them to tell me basically what they were about. But these went round to schools and campuses. And you see that they started with things like, you know, who am I? Self-meaning. What is intimacy? And yes, number 4 there you see, it deals with homoeroticism, a little bit of the history of that, a little bit of, you know, the pitfalls of that, the problems associated with that. But it's done in a context. And you can see there's QR codes there for more information. And they're conversation starters, and they're things for discussion groups. And they were invited around high schools and universities to display these banners, and they wanted to make that a more positive interaction with a very controversial and sensitive issue. In the Faroe Islands, evangelism was an issue because everybody thought they were Christian. It's a Bible Belt. In fact, some of my colleagues' friends from one of the islands, their parents were really, really concerned if they went to the big bad world of Tórshavn, which is the capital, because they might lose their faith. Because, you know, so it's a Bible Belt within a Bible Belt. But our leaders there realized that, well, if we just have an evangelistic event, people will think they're already Christians. They won't know what to do. So we'll have a discipleship event. And, of course, part of that was very early on some folks realizing, well, maybe we're not Christians. And so they actually did, you know, what we would call discipleship in order to help people get their eyes open to the fact that cultural religion is not Christianity. And then spiritual formation. In Finland, one of the things I was really impressed with was that their curriculum really does go deep. It's not just evangelism, stick them in a Bible study and then keep doing that. They will have a process by whereby people will be trained. There will be spiritual formation. And that they take that seriously in their work. And it's no surprise that many people from Finland become cross-cultural missionaries, and the woman who leads our Estonian movement is somebody who's come from Finland, because it's a very close in language and in culture. So that spiritual formation has borne fruit. And then Platform for Lifelong Learning, graduate and publishing ministry in Spain. You'll see from my T-shirt that one of the IFES languages is Spanish, but Spain find themselves stuck in an English-speaking region. So, but they've got such a strong movement because from the beginning they emphasized graduate ministry, connection with the churches, and actually developed their own publishing ministry where many of the books that are in our bookstall across the way, many of them will have been translated by our GBU movement into Spanish and distributed among the Spanish-speaking world. And then finally, church engagement and resilience. When we went to Belarus, and again, I'm not showing any people here, just the stage, but that gives you an example of the size of the event in that country. For years, they struggled with church engagement. I went about 7 or 8 years ago, my first visit, and I said, how can I pray? They said, pray for our churches. I said, because we have nowhere to meet. I says, well, why can't you meet in that church that we've just been in? Well, when we meet there, the pastor from the other church won't let his students come. And if we meet in his church, the pastor from this church won't let his students come. And I was appalled because they're like not point whatever of the population. And so what they did in their their conference was they started to invite musicians from the different churches to do the Monday night, and then different on the Tuesday night, different on the Wednesday night, so that they all got exposed to what the student movement was doing. And then the relationships thawed. And they realized, oh, I'd love my students to come to this. So creative engagement with a diversity of churches, and also resilience at times of difficulty. A couple of our movements have gone through real difficulty and hostility from outside the church and from inside the church in some cases. But what we have found is that those who have grown have come through that period, a little like what Sam was saying last night about the hostility, just through being showing love and hospitality. And so, to conclude, don't generalize European. There's a difference between Northern European, Protestant, Southern European, Catholic, and Eastern European Orthodox cultures, just to give that example. Share the gospel. Don't defend the culture. The gospel is applicable all across Europe. Practice hospitality, generosity, transparency. Show how good the gospel is for body, mind, and spirit, not just the mind, but for the whole self. And communicate creation care as a gospel issue. Don't get tied up in, you know, the statistics or whether this is true or that's not true or it's a liberal agenda or whatever. For students today, this is a live issue. For Christians, it should be a live issue. And we can actually use it to point beyond the creation to the Creator. And then use technology without forfeiting community. There is a way in which we can use the technology while still creating good community. And that's some of the challenges that our groups are facing. I'm going to finish there because it'll give us 10 minutes for questions. And I've talked enough and I need some of my wife's water before I can go any further.
Thank you very much. That was really superb. I was interested to know if you see differences in evangelism around the region, sort of based on cultural things. I live in Portugal, northern Portugal, which is very, very different from Spain. And they're kind of, it's a more introverted culture and not so persuasive. Do you find that evangelism happens more in certain cultures and not in others?
Yeah. Okay, the question was, are there examples of how evangelism happens differently in different cultures? And the connection, how Portugal is a more introverted, slightly different culture than Spain. Yes, interesting question. I suppose we have always believed that any thriving movement will hold on to three broad types of evangelism: personal evangelism, smaller group evangelism, and proclamation evangelism. And there is a place for all three. And there's different ways of doing all three. I showed you how the small group one was different through the impact groups than maybe what we would normally have done. And similarly, even proclamation. I think maybe some of the more introverted cultures, etc., have shied away, oh, that doesn't work in our context. But we have found through a couple of our ministries that maybe by doing it slightly differently, it does. I was invited to do a mission in Croatia. And again, they were very suspicious about this. You know, traditional Catholic culture, different from the rest of the Balkans. It won't work here. But first of all, in the topics we chose, so they asked me to speak about, has our country had too much religion? So coming from Ireland, I could identify with that. And that was a hot topic. And what's the difference between what I'm talking about and what we grew up with? We also did it in a local pub. It's interesting because campus access is a massive issue. And if you go to the IFES stand with Jill, she has a wonderful little game where you can decide which countries give you full access for activities and which don't. And it will surprise you. There will be countries you think you can be totally open and you can't. There'll be others that will surprise you that you can. So that's a big issue. And in Croatia, they weren't successful in getting campus rooms. And the only place that would let them in was this pub that said, so long as we can stay open and serve our normal customers while it's happening. So I was speaking in like this part of it, and there was open arches, and guys were just watching the sport or whatever. The guy was coming in, taking the drinks orders as I was speaking. But the people who came increased every night as people thought, this is something a little bit different. So how you do it, where you did it, and also I think even getting ideas from like-minded situations, because as soon as you said Portugal, Spain, I thought of my New Zealand colleague who said, you know, we have had to struggle to see how can we do it in a way that's not Australian. My Canadian friends, how do we do it in a way that's not Ireland, how do we do it in a way that's not British? Because naturally your closest neighbors can have a dominant effect. But you look and say, well, what would it mean for us? So maybe even talking to the Irish or the Canadians and saying, well, how did you guys manage this? You know, it's a similar context there. So I would just say don't not do proclamation. But think of, because there will always be those. I mean, if you just do personal evangelism and small group evangelism, you're limited to the people you know. By occasionally doing proclamation evangelism as well, maybe just for 1 week a year or two nights a year or Christmas or Easter, but just doing something special for everybody, you actually extend your reach. So it's still important to do that.
I'm aware that there is a great growth of international students in various countries. We've seen it in Britain, but I'm aware in Serbia, for instance, I'm quite familiar with, that they have now got three or four international student groups that meet in English, but English is not the language of Serbia.
Yeah.
So to what extent is this a growing trend in Europe, and to what extent are IFES or any other group helping to facilitate that?
Good question. The question was about international groups that meet in English that is not the language of the country. Well, it's why in some respects we do have a separate international student ministry in many of these countries. And if you go to Friends International Or if you go to Interaction IFES, you will get other information about that. It is growing. And I suppose the universities in these countries want to attract these students because they bring money with them. So they're always going to be there. And the positive side there is that it gives folks that are here at Keswick an immediate avenue into. They could say, well, I'd love to go and work in Romania, or I'd love to go and work in Poland or wherever, but I don't know the language. Well, there's immediately a potential area of work for you to go to. And so I'll maybe just leave it there, because you can get all that information from us afterwards. I've been given a 3-minute warning, so maybe time for one more question.
I understand you do international conferences for European Christian students. Tell us a little bit about them.
Okay. We do a lot of things. You can find out on our IFES website. And every 3 years, we used to do one that any student could come to. We do other smaller events as well, and regionals. Revive was one of those ones which we did, and in many ways outgrew our primary work. So this year in Latvia, in just a few weeks' time, we're meeting, and we hope to have several hundred students there from, you know, over 20 countries. And that's something we'll want to repeat every 3 years, so that every student in Europe will get the chance not just to see folks from their own country, but from others. And that's very important if you're a student in Macedonia, if you're a student in Malta, or if you're a student in a smaller place, that there's something you can go to. There may not be another one for a few years, but the idea is that in everybody's student experience for 3 years, there'll be one happening. For those who are really keen on international student ministry or Muslim ministry or proclamation evangelism or small group Bible study, we have smaller gatherings, and we can give information about those as well.